This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Shot up at the buzzer, it's good!
Brooks Hall!
The place hits it at the buzzer, the Dayton Flyers!
Pandemonium in the Dayton Decibel Dungeon!
Sanford crashed all the way up.
This is one of the great college basketball venues in the nation, UD Arena.
And welcome back. Thank you for coming back. Took last week off, busy week for your host and fellow co-host here. So took a week off. Hey, the teams get a weekend off to recharge. So does the podcast. Okay, we get a week. We needed a week there. But we're back, refreshed, ready to go. A lot of stuff to talk about today. It is Drew, co-podcaster of the year. I am joined by the other half of the co-podcaster of the year, Dan Sullivan. Sully, how are we doing this afternoon?
Doing great. I'm watching afternoon hoops as I do my day job here. And if you know me, you know that I love nothing more than afternoon hoops because usually this time of the afternoon, we're recording at like 4 p.m. on a Tuesday. I'm usually throwing on some reruns or some Aerial America for those that are happy or familiar with the Smithsonian channel. So afternoon hoops, very welcome. Watching some pillow fights in the A-10, and both of them have been close games, so I can't complain.
They've definitely been games, that's for sure.
They are basketball games that had to take place.
This is everyone gets so riled up about the first weekend of the tournament, and rightfully so. It's the big dance. It's the big marquee event. But for like true college basketball sickos like myself and you, where we've been watching, you know, a lot of Dayton basketball, so by proxy, a lot of Atlantic 10 basketball, and, you know, catching games wherever we can. You know, I know you've been dipping your toes in the MWC a lot. I've been pretty locked in on the Horizon this year because of producing NKU basketball games on the radio. So I've been kind of locked into those and, you know, the various other college basketball games. This week is almost better because you get that wall-to-wall action of the first 2 days for four, because all the big dogs don't start till later in the week. And then obviously you have the first games of the, you know, the Atlantic 10, the Big 12 starting today when we were recording this Tuesday. And, you know, it's one of those times of year where you can start to taste it. You start to feel it. It's in the air. The weather's getting warmer. March Madness just around the corner. And for the sickos, I feel like this is a great week.
It is. It's a high volume week, right? Like, correct. I don't particularly love the sentiment when people are like, I love this week more than the tournament. Like, no. Okay, I do have a problem with that because like the stakes are so much higher next week than they are this week, right? But if you're just a true basketball enjoyer, there is nothing better than championship week because of the volume of games. And I'll take a quick aside because we used to do this a lot. And my travels took me through Mountain West country, which I was extremely fortunate to do for work a couple weeks back. But I had a chance to go to Utah State. They overlap with my business interests. So I had to go to Logan for a meeting. And I conveniently timed it with a basketball game against San Diego State. If you stayed up late, you watched it a couple weeks ago. It was like late at the end of February. And awesome game. First of all, like it was just a great like pound for pound college basketball game. You had the drama. You had two good teams, two good big men, you know, two good coaches, Dutcher and Danny Sprinkle, who just won Mountain West Conference Coach of the Year. But beyond that, it was one of those really old arenas that was just a bowl. It's just a simple bowl, 50 rows down into the ground, and that's it. And like the ceiling tiles felt like they had coffee stains on them, and the chairs have those all like weird colors and whatnot. Awesome, awesome arena. The student section is so much better than any student section I've ever seen. And it's just for the simple fact that like a third of the Utah State Arena is students. Absolutely blew me away. I mean, it was a great night. It was a great Tuesday. I got to sit like five rows off the floor, which always kind of heightens the experience a little bit.
Yeah.
But I want to take a quick aside there and shout out to the Aggies. Not that our reach gets that far out west, but it was just a really awesome experience. And you don't really get to do things like that on a Tuesday night too often. So it was very cool. But yeah, I mean, March is upon us, man. We got, four tickets have already been punched as of Tuesday afternoon, and we got five more tonight. So we're rocking and rolling, man. We're ready to go. It's basketball season.
Yes, we are. We are rocking and rolling. And let's rock and roll right into some Dayton basketball talk. Obviously, Dayton's final regular season game took place last Friday at the Decibel Dungeon. And the Decibel Dungeon it was in that second half. It got loud, LOWD, all caps, there in the second half. When Dayton took the lead, I believe it was 62-60 or 64-62. I remember just like looking around and soaking it in and like, yes, this is loud. This is what this arena is all about, was games like that, moments like those. You know, Kobe Elvis, for as frustrating of a player as he is, and you know, the last minutes of overtime don't wash away that frustration, but he makes two of the biggest shots of the season in quick succession. Dayton holds off ECU down the stretch to win in OT after trailing by as much as 17 points in the first half. And when they got set down 17, they all just kind of collectively said, we have to climb. And they climbed, they scratched, they clawed, they got it to 7 at half, and then kind of took control of the game there in the second half. Sully, it's the kind of chess we've been looking for out of this ball club, especially the last month. What did Dayton show you? Did Dayton show you anything to give you more optimism as we head into the high stakes poker match?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you said it, like it use your nomenclature, but it showed they have some balls, like, you know, just nuts to go out and win a tough game. I mean, they did it at home, didn't do it on the road. Okay, granted. But that was the kind of effort we've been looking for, not only this season, but from the Deron Holmes Flyers. Like, we really, if I had one complaint on Holmes, and I don't think I've ever even said anything negative, even on Twitter, about Holmes in all these years, but if I had one negative thing about him, it's that some nights I just don't feel like he's got the dog in him, you know, where he's like, give me the ball and I'm going to win the game. You know,
I feel similar.
And he has. Yeah, I mean, obviously he's had so many dominant performances, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but he hasn't won big games in March. He hasn't won big time, you know, thrillers that are in neutral sites, on the road, what have you. You know, I guess you could throw the Kansas game in a couple years ago, but that's kind of on a fluky shot. I don't really feel like, you know, Dayton was dogging that one out, but putting that aside, it just kind of gave me a little bit more optimism that when they're up against the ropes, not that it's likely, but Dayton's got a chance. In the last two seasons, and even big parts of this one, I have not felt that way. And again, it's because of the core of the team. Like, I've found myself asking a lot, like, is Deron too nice? You know, he's such a nice kid. And everybody talks about, you know, what a class act he is. But again, then when we flip it and you get to the on-the-court product, I don't want you to be a nice guy anymore. I want you to flip the switch. And I think sometimes he does have that trouble. Like, you got to have that dog in you when it comes down to these games in March that are one possession. We're in the last 5 minutes. And you got to have guys that know how to win those games. And up till this point, I really didn't feel like that about the Dayton roster. And I found myself walking away from the VCU game saying, okay, you know what? If they're up against the ropes and down 6, 5 minutes to go, maybe they do have a chance after all. And that, you know, I went through that whole diatribe without even bringing up the 3-point shooting from Brea, who's kind of, I mean, he's becoming a real weapon and a real guy that you're just going to have to follow around, which can open up a lot of stuff for Dayton. So those are the two biggest ones for me.
Yeah, for sure. And I share the sentiment about, you know, sometimes I wish I would see a little bit more, and for lack of a better term, fuck you from the guys. And I felt I saw that on Friday. Like, you could see it in their eyes. You could see it in the body language. I will say, they got down 17, but no one held their head down. No one slouched their shoulders, or there was no pointing and arguing. It was, hey, we're in this spot. And, you know, credit to VCU. They shot 49 threes in that game. and it felt like they made 30. I think they ended, I don't know how many they finished with, but
18
they
or 42. Were all,
but it felt like everyone was just timely. It just felt like whenever they needed one, they got one. And it's not like we were leaving them wide open with 4 feet of space. Like they were making some tough shots. So BCU had a lot to play for in that game. The double bye was on the line for them. You know, while Dayton was pretty much locked into the 3 seed, right, could have very easily just kind of been like, you know what, whatever. But no, like, it's like, nope, we want to defend home court. They go, one of my things with Dayton every year is don't lose a home game. And, you know, right, for however many games they play at home, more times than not, they'll run into one night or two where it just doesn't go our way and we lose. So the fact that, you know, their struggles on the road have been well documented. And, you know, obviously the competition they played on the road was the upper tier competition of the conference. But when it came to playing at home, despite some games that didn't look great, they still found ways to win and go undefeated at home, which should be commended. And you know, I think it's only happened 4 times since 2000.
It's only happened 4 times ever since the arena opened.
Okay, I knew it's all 4 times. I wasn't sure. That's right. Yeah, only 4 times. So this is your fourth. This was the fourth.
Yep, fourth one. Yep. So you got 2009, you got 2015, 2020, and then 2024.
There you go. Yep. So again, that's something to be commended. And the energy in the building, it just felt like they built a lot of confidence heading into tournament time this week. And it pretty much was the polar opposite of what happened in Chicago against Loyola.
Yeah, I would say so. But again, it was a different kind of game, right? That Loyola game, Dayton kind of had control of it the whole time, and then they relinquished. I mean, which I guess is kind of a good thing to say. But even so, you know, Dayton kind of was even at the free throw line against Loyola, and we've seen that's pretty much not a formula that's going to work for the Flyers, because they're going to give up buckets elsewhere. And against VCU, that was where they won the game, was they got to the line 25 times, VCU did 6. So I think that they had a little bit better shooting performance against VCU. You can probably attribute that to playing at home, right? Like we always do. But I mean, it was weird because in the Loyola game, it's like they had it and then they just couldn't stop turning the ball over. You know, they got doubled up on turnovers and then the free throw count was even. And, you know, those are just not factors that are going to go in our favor. And I especially when I look back at box scores in like Loyola games, this is where the slow offense of Grant is volatile, okay? Because if you're not maximizing your possessions, that means you're just putting more weight on each one. So one turnover for a team like St. John's, for example, is not going to be the same weight as a turnover for Dayton. And that's just a simple fact that Dayton's averaging about 64 possessions per game right now. You look at a team like St. John's, I'm referencing them because they played us earlier in the year. And if you remember, we kind of started to play their style instead of our style. They get 5 more possessions a game, right? That's a big fucking deal. And that's why we kind of talk about all the time that the thing that I'm looking at right now is that I need just a little bit of adjustment of Dayton for a little bit more urgency, because if you're going to play this slow pace, that works if you're an incredibly efficient team, which Dayton obviously is. But the second point of that is Dayton is incredibly good three-point shooting team, and they have been all year. So for me, my money in a tournament, a winner-take-all game or a weekend where you have to play multiple games, the volume of possessions and getting as many shots at the rim is important. But again, if I'm playing devil's advocate with how you see Grant play offense, that can go both ways, right? Because you could say, well, Dayton is efficient because they take their time. Granted, that's a good point. My view right now, or my opinion, is that the path for Dayton to have success, or the best chance I think they have at making a run, is to get 4 or 5 more possessions per game, where they're going to get a 3-pointer, they're going to get the ball to Brea, or Deron Holmes is going to get to the line, because those are strengths. And if they can do that a couple more times a game, it's not going to necessarily win it for you, but it's going to increase your percentage chance of winning that game. And that's all we're talking about right now, is the margins.
Right, exactly. And that's just putting yourself in the best possible position to win come this time of year. And that's all you need. is just put yourself in the position to win the games. And I think our talent level and things like that can win out in the end. So let's, you know, we've started discussing the tournament here. Let's kind of take a look and see what Dayton's path is. They'll play the winner of the triumvirate of Duquesne, Rhode Island, and St. Louis. Rhode Island and St. Louis have not played at time of recording. They are the third game on Tuesday afternoon at 4:30. So the winner of that game will play Duquesne, and then the winner of that game will get the Flyers. And then the Flyers are probably looking at a rematch with Loyola Chicago, barring them losing to St. Bonaventure or LaSalle or George Washington. And George Washington is currently up one with 50 seconds to go. So that's kind of your path there. That's kind of your path there. Don't sleep on Bonaventure. If they win their first game playing Loyola, they kind of put it on Loyola in Loyola's last loss of the latest loss of the season. So that'll be an interesting rematch dynamic there. But I think more than likely you're going to be looking at a rematch with Loyola Chicago in the semis if Dayton wins their first game. What does that make you feel? How do you view a potential rematch with Loyola?
Yeah, it's a little far ahead, but I think it's warranted in this regard. I'm not necessarily shaking in my boots to play Duquesne for a third time. They just didn't really do anything that was all that effective. Dan Brown always wants to like slow it down on Dayton, but like that doesn't work. You got to speed up on Dayton, and they're not really going to thrive in that role. So, I look at this a little bit more neutral court. I've been kind of a non-believer on Loyola, as you know, and I had to, you know, I had to say I was wrong on that one. They tore through the league. It is what it is. But to your point, they played St. Bonaventure on the road. They lost by 15. So I don't know. You get them away from home. You get a bad start. I think of all the quarterfinal teams, top four, I actually believe that Loyola and Bonaventure is more likely to upset. I hate to say like VCU upsetting UMass. That's not an upset. It's a 4-5. But of the top three here, I think Bonaventure having an upset over Loyola is probably the most likely. I don't see Richmond going down to George Mason or St. Joseph's. And I don't know, man. It's like, you know, do I want to start looking ahead to the Saturday semifinal? I think we both know better in the history of the A-10 tournament with Dayton, right?
All this is predicated with you got to beat whoever you play in that quarterfinal game. You know, as we've seen before, losses can happen. And here's the thing. If they do lose, well, kind of throw your hands up in the air. We get a few extra days rest before we head to the tournament. So,
right. To answer your question directly, the thing that should worry Dayton fans about Loyola is that they're deep. If you remember in the game against Dayton, they played 9 guys in that game. And actually, they played 10 and 11 guys that got like bench minutes for breathers. And that's just going to be a tough matchup, whether it's now or later in the NCAA tournament. Teams that are deep and they can go 10, 9 guys, that means they can stretch you out. They can run you. They can shoot a little bit more. And again, they can be a little bit more aggressive on defense to force turnover. So if you're a Dayton fan thinking like, which matchup do we want to avoid come Selection Sunday? That's one. Look for teams that are deep and you're going to want to avoid those if you're Dayton. And that's, I feel strongly about that.
Yeah. Your point's well taken there in terms of their depth. And there are, you know, it's kind of interesting to see the different philosophies play out throughout college basketball. I was doing the NKU Milwaukee game last night for radio, and you know, NKU gets out to a 7-8 point lead at the half, but they effectively played 6 guys and one and they played 7, but the one guy had a hobbled ankle and couldn't really go, and Milwaukee played 11, and just in the second half you could see it. Just NKU got wore down. Like Milwaukee just kept doing what they were doing, and eventually they wore them out. Now, you know, if both of those teams are playing on, you know, same rest and like during the regular season, I think probably NKU's talent wins out. But that depth where Milwaukee just kept going and going and going, and it wore them out. But and from Dayton's point of view, and a lot of this happens with basketball, especially when games get tight at every level, and NBA included, when you get to the NBA playoffs, it's like it's our top 7 versus your top 7. And if you're going to play your eighth or ninth or 10th guy, it's like, we're going at that guy and we're going to go at him until A, he proves he belongs on the floor, or B, you take him out. And it's very like, and it's a very interesting, I think it's what makes basketball so great, is you play a lot of games in the regular season, you have these different philosophies, but when the chips are down, it becomes a much bigger war of attrition with your top end talent. And I think that is why Dayton has a very, very big advantage going into this tournament. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win it. I'm not saying they're going to win it. I hope they do, for God's sake, because Lord knows I just want to get this monkey off our back and move forward with it. But that's why I'm not just putting blind faith optimism in the like, oh, we're Dayton, we're going to win. It's like, I do believe in our top end talent. And when it comes to these close and high stakes games, I'll take that over having 10 guys that could hypothetically play.
Yeah, again, it's just like what I said earlier. There's merit on both sides because, you know,
now if you have 10 dudes that can play, like, yeah, right. That's when, like, that was Dayton in 2014. It was like, right. Yeah, we went 9-10 deep, but when we put Kendall Pollard and Scoochie Smith in the game, you didn't run them off the court.
Yeah, right.
They belonged.
Yeah, they just kind of kept things going until people got breathers, they didn't even do that, right? I mean,
And it's one thing to play 10 guys in a home court environment where they're comfortable versus at the Barclays Center in an A-10 semifinal game where you potentially are a game away from being a game away from the tournament. You know, those are real stakes for young kids. So that's kind of where I net out in that kind of philosophy. But from the top end of the bracket, who do you think will make the final in the top? Are you going with Richmond, which would be the chalk pick?
No, I mean, you can't bet against VCU, man. You just can't. You know, every year you try to count them out. You try to say, they're down this year, and then they just figure out a way. You know, they just always figure out a way. Like I said, it's not an upset to say 4-5, but like, I very much think we will be seeing a Richmond VCU semifinal on Saturday, followed by Dayton against Bonaventure or Loyola. That is very much how I see things playing out. And frankly, I mean, you know, the familiarity, like, that's a game that I'm betting my money on VCU over Richmond, and you should too. Now, if they shock the world, fine, they shock the world or whatever. They are the one seed. But I mean, I can't even see, if they're on a neutral floor Saturday afternoon, I don't even know if they're favored, Richmond Spiders over VCU. I don't think so. Or
that was going to be my question about the UMass game, was despite being the 5 seed, I bet VCU is a three or four point favorite in that game.
Yeah, no, they'll be favored in that game. But I mean, yeah, for Dayton right now, like, the only thing we really have to worry about is the volatility of the short bench, right? We're at the point now where, let's hope we get Bennett back this weekend. And honestly, yes, I don't even need to see him on Thursday. If you can't beat Duquesne without Bennett, then you don't deserve to win the A-10 anyways.
Correct.
But, you know, let's say he comes in Saturday, Sunday. Really, the only thing that matters right now for Dayton is those seven guys staying healthy. Because after that, I mean, they're fucked. Like, that's all they have. And I would say if there's one failing of this team, it's the lack of depth. You know, given Mally Smith was injured to go down, boy, it'd be really great to have 2 point guards right now, wouldn't it? But I think that's the biggest thing that you have to hold under the microscope, you know, and it's across the lineup. It's not just Holmes. It's not just Kobe Bray shooting threes. It's everybody. Like, Dayton needs the guys that they have left as warm bodies, because you've seen what the rest of the bench looks like. It looks like Brady Yule. It looks like Petrus Podigemas, who is basically just turned into a warm body on the roster. I mean,
sure,
God bless the kid, but he's not giving Dayton anything except minutes, and that is all. He's a zero contributor across the board.
Yeah, and you know, in a regular season game, you kind of need those bodies to get through a season.
Right.
But we're at the point now where You know, it's you guys.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
It's sink or swim with the 7 that we got. You might get some spot minutes from Jack. You may be able to sneak some minutes for Petrus in there. And then it's kind of same deal with Brady. You know, it's like, hey, we just need you for 3 minutes. Don't do anything stupid. Like, that's all you got to do and all that. So you brought up Juwan Bennett. I was going to bring this up as well. Anthony Grant said today, this is from David Jablonski. Anthony Grant said Juwan Bennett returned to practice on Monday and, quote, if everything goes well the next couple of days, he should be available for the Atlantic 10 tournament. So deep sigh of relief there from the Flyer faithful, I think.
To a degree.
We tried to envision, you kind of picture is like, what does this look like without Juwan Bennett? And, you know, they play well at St. Louis. They kill St. Louis. They put 100 up, and then they win Friday. You can look at it like, oh, well, they figured it out. But again, he's another Friday body.
My friend.
He doesn't.
No game Friday. Don't forget. There's no game on Friday.
Correct.
Don't forget. I'm just saying. Don't forget. There's no fucking game on Friday. So don't go looking for it.
Right.
Stupidest
exactly.
setup ever. I get to bitch about that real quick. I didn't mean to
go ahead.
Break you in your train of thought, but it's so fucking dumb. It's the stupidest thing ever. I hate it.
We'll have plenty of dumb stuff that the Atlantic 10 does to talk about here momentarily.
This is later.
So.
But that's fucking ridiculous. Stop tinkering around with the schedule. It's dumb.
Yep. So we'll see. I'm kind of with you there. I could see them holding him out of the Duquesne game. And then if you get Loyola, bringing him back for that Loyola game, it'll be interesting to see. I believe it's his left hand, so it's his non-shooting hand, which is a positive development. But it isn't.
You can't put him in there without like a hand. Then they're just like,
right,
fucking
beat for him, sure. I'm not discrediting. I'm not discrediting how much Juwan Bennett uses his left hand while playing basketball. I understand it's a big part of his game to be able to dribble the ball with both hands. So, you know, like we said, it's kind of a wait and see with it. You know how college coaches are with injuries and things like that. They're not obligated to give anybody any sort of updates, so they don't. And people who think that this is only an Anthony Grant issue of not having injury updates for players, I got news for you. Every coach in college basketball and college football, for this matter, does this because they're not obligated to do anything about it. And
nor
eventually, and until the rules get passed down that you have to submit injury reports, they're going to continue to do that. Okay. You've waited
I'll
around.
Add a quick aside. I'll add a quick aside before you say that. If you're out there as a fan wondering, like, oh, what's the update? If Dayton hasn't given you an update, that's bad. Okay, go on.
Correct. Yes. As we kind of smooth transition here, when you were talking about the Atlantic 10 schedule, the Atlantic 10 awards released on Tuesday, the day we are recording this. And I made the co-podcaster of the year joke at the top of the show because the Atlantic 10 has co-players of the year, your very own Daron Holmes and Richmond's Jordan King. By every metric you look at, whether advanced or just statistic-based or just by watching the basketball that plays in front of you, you can clearly see that Daron Holmes is the best player in this league. And there were a lot of people from other A-10 fan bases and national writers and people with Twitter accounts that have nothing to do with that. I even saw draft guys. Like, you know, draft Twitter guys going, how in the hell does Daron Holmes not win player of the year outright in the Atlantic 10? He probably should have 2. He's got 0.5. This conference is, you know, we joke about it and we complain about it. And the worst part of it all is that there's nowhere else to go. We're stuck in it until we aren't.
Right. Right.
But my God, you said it best today off air. This should be a day where you look at this stuff for 30 seconds and go, cool.
Awesome. Ronald,
player of the year, Kobe Bryant, sixth man, Bron, defensive, like who made first, second team? You look at it and then you forget about it. Instead, the Atlantic 10 goes and does something like this, creates a firestorm for themselves with their feet getting dragged over the coals. And, you know, I've seen some people on Twitter, you know, trying to make sense of it or trying to reason about it. Shout out to you, Justin Kinner, for maybe one of the dumbest things I've ever read on Twitter about.
That's where I was going to start. That's where I was going to start.
He's the best player, no doubt. It's like, well, they give him the award.
Yeah. Well, that's just it, right? So I always, when we have discussions like this, I want to know what the other side is. Because, like, you know, there's not a single argument in sports anymore where there isn't somebody on the other side saying something contrarian to what you believe or the masses believe, right? And Kinner's point was basically just like, why do people care? And I said it because right in the other side of his statement, he said, well, you know, Durant's probably the best player, you know, in the conference, but, you know, the other team was number one, so they gave it to him. And I said, well, you answered your question. The annoyance from this award comes from the fact that we can now deduce beyond a reasonable doubt that it is not given to the best player in the conference that year. That is now fact. That is something that you cannot prove to me with any amount of data. It's a similar discussion of when I got into it with the guy that was on the selection committee on Twitter. And I said, there is statistical data going back at least 15 years now that say there is a minimal impact from conference tournaments on the seeding. So we have 15 years of data. And David Warlock replied to us on Twitter and he goes, no, that's not correct. And I said, okay, give me your reasoning. And he basically just said, well, I'm in the room, so it's not correct. And I was like, okay, I know that you're in the room, but let's back up here. What I'm not saying, like, I'm like refuting what you're saying. What I'm saying is what you're saying is completely wrong because I have 15 years of data to back it up. This is kind of the same thing. It's like, it's not really something that I even want to get like upset about because at this point I can completely dismiss the conference tournament awards. They're a fucking joke. They don't mean anything. They're not merit-based. And I don't even understand how the A10 could look at this any other way than, hey, we have this national product this year and one of the nicest dudes in our program history who will smile, take pictures. This morning he was at a second graders class reading them a book. As a conference who struggles to get their brand out there, their image, why in the fucking world wouldn't you want to just put Daron Holmes everywhere? Because you only get him for the next, 2 weeks? Maybe. And now in the last 2 weeks of him existing in your conference for media purposes, for branding, for advertising, you go out and put this completely indefensible Player of the Year award, co-Player of the Year award out there. I mean, it's just, not only is it ridiculous from a statistical standpoint, but from a business standpoint, it makes no sense. And how many times have you seen on Twitter people be like, oh, this is fixed because they want blah, blah, blah to win? This is actually one of those times when it would fucking benefit the conference, you know, when they could be like completely, even if it wasn't unanimous. Nobody would fucking know. Right. They would just be like, yes, unanimously player of the year. No one would even care. So again, it's a two-pronged thing here. It's like the A10 had an opportunity to continue propping up who was their best player, spokesperson, you know, the guy that could really bring in some marketing dollars or that you could even put in commercials. But instead, we're dealing with this controversy online against, for an award that frankly means like nothing in the grand scheme of things. He's not getting paid more next year in the NBA because he didn't win this award.
And the thing about it is you mentioned all the marketing opportunities and stuff, is that now if Dayton wins this tournament, they are your only team moving on.
100%. Yeah.
And when they get into the first round game and they show the player profile like they always do, and Kevin Harlan is calling the game and he's like, this is Daron Holmes. He was second team All-American defensive player there. And he was co-player of the year in the Atlantic 10. Right. And the casual fan is going to go, well, who is this other guy that was the co-player? And then they go and look and they see like everything that we're seeing now, they see 3 weeks into the future or 2 weeks into the future.
Right.
And they go, what the hell is wrong with this league? Like, who is running this league?
Right.
Instead of just being like, this is your Atlantic 10 player of the year playing in March Madness. He's probably going to get drafted next year. You know, all these accolades. He's one of Dayton's best players of the modern era. In a long list of them, the successor to Obi Toppin, you know, I'm just saying the kind of phrases that you may hear when you right. tune in to watch Dayton play in the NCAA tournament. And
right.
the fact that like they just don't have the foresight to see that and just like, yeah, we're going to do I almost would have rathered him not win it at all. Is that weird right. to say? Like,
right.
I almost would have rather it's like, all right, well, at least you're telling me that this award is going to the best player on the best team. I can live with right. that. Right. But the fact that they, you know, wanted to play both sides and they get nothing out of it other than me and you yelling on a podcast about it and people getting mad about it online. That's all it did.
Yeah. No, it did. And that's really the bottom line here is that they had an opportunity to just do the thing that no one would have even shared words about. It would have been an afterthought in the news cycle today in college basketball. There's so many games on. Nobody even cares about these awards 9 times out of 10. But instead, we're talking about it. People are bitching about it. The tweet that I put underneath the official announcement, like shit talking, it got more likes than the original tweet, like announcing yeah. Durant.
Oh, they got ratio of the year. Very quickly.
Yeah. And I mean, again, that's like a small sample size. I'm not going to sit here like that sure, matters in the right. real world. But like,
no,
it's just. It's indicative of like how egregious it is. Like anytime you have multiple fan bases coming together on a point like this, you know, you fucked up because like VCU right. fans aren't coming out of the woodwork trying to support Dayton for anything in anything.
And here's the thing. If Daron Holmes played for UMass, I'll just throw them out there. Daron Holmes plays for UMass, has the same exact season, all the same exact numbers.
Still the best player.
I would still feel this way. Be like, this is right. dumb. This is stupid. Like
right.
this isn't because he's our guy, you know, maybe it makes it sting a little bit more for him. You know, you feel for him, you know, people can say they don't care about individual accolades all they want, but they still make you feel good when you win them. And I'm sure right. he probably should have two of them and he's got a half of one. And, you know, last year, I disagreed with last year's with Ace Baldwin winning it. But again, I could at least like, no, you know what? Like they wanted it to be the best player on the best team. And he had plenty of moments and he was very good. So like, I could live with that one. This one, it was crazy. I got these two news items within like 30 seconds of each other. One was Jameis Winston becoming the Browns backup quarterback, which was awesome. I love Jameis Winston. Love that. And then like literally 30 seconds later, this dropped. I was just like, I got happiness for 30 seconds today, and now I'm stuck to Twitter. I'm reading all the reaction to it. I text you, and so we're doing at least 15 minutes on this because Lord knows they deserve it, and it's quite the experience. And again, you know, if there was somewhere Dayton could go, I'd be the first person at the front of the line to get on the train to go wherever the hell it was. But there really isn't. Yeah. We are where we are.
You know, I'll finish this segment with another yes, example do. Of my pragmatism over the years. But I went back to see like what I said last year when they did these awards. It was March 7th of 2023. And I said, I don't love banter around conference awards, but I would love to know what metric one uses to form the basis of their opinion when they voted for Ace Baldwin over Holmes. I brought this up specifically because the tone of what I'm asking is significantly different than this year. This year, I'm asking, how the fuck could you do this? Last year, I was asking, okay, I would simply like to know what the basis of this opinion is. And I'm sure that somebody somewhere could have backed it up. I didn't really receive a lot of compelling arguments, but I think that is the exact difference of what we're saying. Is it normally in a year, you look at these awards and you go, show your work. This year, you're just like, there's no work to show. You just put him on there because he's on the number one team. And so that, you know, that's it for me in A10 awards. I don't have to fucking care about them.
Yep.
They're stupid. They're meaningless. They're not results based. They're not the player of the year is not the best player in the conference. So I just don't really have to give a rat's ass about it anymore. And if you do, great. Of course, the players do. You want to win awards, but bigger fish to fry. We're moving on. Dayton's playing Thursday night. And then let's roll the ball out and get it going.
Yep. I'd be remiss. Let's give
behind us. You know.
We'll give Kobe Brea his recognition. He wins sixth man of the year again. He's had a tremendous season. He's as he should. He was probably unanimous. I don't even know if that award gets unanimous, but if it was, I'm sure he was unanimous. And, you know, Duran, co-player of the year, first team, defensive player of the year. So, you know, those are our guys that won awards. I saw Nate Santos made an all-academic team, if you care about that sort of thing, things of that nature.
Of course, got to graduate the boys, too.
Exactly. We're, you know, they're students first. It's student-athlete, not athlete-student. Despite what everything about college sports today, especially football and basketball, is telling you. Sully, you came prepared, as you always do, with some trivia. And I've been dying to get to it since I pressed record. Gonzaga St. Mary's themed, I believe.
It is. Yeah, we got some title games tonight. Western Conference title is one of them, or West Coast Conference, rather, is one of them. Gonzaga taking on St. Mary's, as they do virtually every single year. So I don't know how well all of our followers are keeping track of the West Coast Conference, but St. Mary's and Gonzaga played for the title last year. They played for the title in 2022. They played for the title in 2019. And you can keep on going back if you'd like. They play BYU in the years that I didn't mention. But if you go back to 2017, they played St. Mary's. If you go back to 2016, they played St. Mary's. And again, 2015 is BYU. The year before that, BYU. So basically, if you're following along, since 2014, 10 seasons of sample size, the WCC championship has only been a combination of BYU, Gonzaga, or St. Mary. So it got me thinking, because Gonzaga actually just like owns that conference start to finish. And we all know that, have for quite some time now. And I think they're going to sneak their way into the tournament, whether they win this game tonight or not. It's just, that's kind of the we talk about this all the time, is like the strength of brand. If you're looking at Gonzaga against, let's just say Indiana State, if you're looking at those programs side by side, I know that Gonzaga is getting that nod to Dayton in the first four, right? So the trivia that I brought along tonight was, I mentioned to some friends that, oh, you know, Gonzaga is the VCU to St. Mary's Dayton, thinking, well, they've dominated St. Mary's. It's probably somewhat similar. It was not similar. So my trivia tonight had to do with, since VCU joined the conference the 2012-13 season, Dayton is 9-15 against VCU. 9-15, I think you could probably imagine that.
Yep.
St. Mary's against Gonzaga is 7-26. They've played 33 times in the last 11 seasons, and they basically play three times a year. Gonzaga's won 26 of 33 meetings. Man, it's not much of a rivalry. It's crazy. I mean, that just shows you how much they dominate the West Coast Conference. But I had to put it out there. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, when you brought that up, I was like, man, yeah, that's probably a lot. 26 and... I thought you were going to go with, like, how many times have they met in the championship and how many times has Gonzaga won? I was ready to say all of them.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, even if I keep going back, you go to 2013, they played St. Mary's. 2012, they played St. Mary's. 2011, they played St. Mary's. 2010, I mean, now I'm clicking through because I don't remember for the sake of the stat. 2009, Gonzaga St. Mary's. 2008, there you go. You have to go all the way back to 2008 because San Diego had a good team for a couple of years there. But you literally have to go back to 2008 to find a West Coast Conference title game that doesn't involve St. Mary's, Gonzaga, or BYU in one of those combinations. It's crazy.
So to contextualize that, somebody who was born in 2009 is in high school. Probably
right, or close right. To all it. They've ever seen, all they've ever seen is Gonzaga play St. Mary's.
All
or
they've
BYU.
Ever seen is Gonzaga, BYU, or St. Mary's. I know my favorite Aussie in the world, Matthew Dellavedova, was involved in a couple of those games. Shout out, Dell.
He was. Yeah, he was.
All right. Yeah. And that's, you know, you got anything else? Am I missing anything? Is there anything else you want to discuss?
No, just, I mean, I'm looking through. You know, this is the best time of the year. We haven't got a chance to do this in 7 years. It's great. You know, we're counting down every day. I'm looking at, you know, the seed lines. Where could Dayton possibly be? To keep in mind for you guys that might be traveling like me, I've narrowed it down to the four East Coast destinations or Eastern destinations I'm going to hit. Indy, Charlotte, Brooklyn, and Pittsburgh. I will definitely be in attendance for one of those if Dayton lands there. The West Coast, not so much. Omaha, Memphis in the center of the country, and then Spokane, Salt Lake City. However, if you are looking to travel to the NCAA tournament like me, you'll like to know what days they are. If Dayton gets placed in Charlotte, Omaha, Pittsburgh, or Salt Lake City, they will be playing on Thursday. They will be playing on Friday if they get placed in Brooklyn, Indy, Spokane, or Memphis. So just want to keep that in mind because it's something that's it's gonna, you know, start to be prevalent, and you're gonna want to have your finger over the trigger on Kayak Sunday night around 6 o'clock if you're gonna fly anywhere or make those driving plans. But you know, if you're not paying attention to the larger landscape, you should be. You know, start taking a look at bracketology. It's the first time, you know, the tournament going on, Selection Sunday on this Sunday. But I will say that the one seeds, they kind of look wrapped up to me. Like Tennessee won their outright title. I really think they're going to get that one seed regardless. I think Arizona is good for the West seed or the West region. They're going to get a one or a two, probably a two now that they kind of stubbed their toe at the end. So what you're looking at right now is that Purdue's going to go to Indianapolis. UConn's going to play in Brooklyn. And then you have that other one. Like Houston's going to go play in Memphis. And Tennessee likely is going to go to Charlotte with a chance or Arizona flip-flops and goes to Salt Lake City. So that's all good news for us because none of those regions are Dayton or Indianapolis. And if you're a Flyers fan, that's what you should be looking at is – is anybody sliding up closer to that that would regionally be aligned with Indy, Indianapolis or Pittsburgh? I can tell you right now, Marquette can pretty much seal their ticket. They're going to go play in Indianapolis. I don't know that they would ship them as far out as Omaha. Iowa State, same thing. They're going to go play in Omaha just for distance. If you're a top four seed, they like to give you geographical preference. So threw a lot out at you, listeners. I hope you can digest, but you get what I'm saying. As these things start to come off the top of the board, you start to get more of an idea of where Dayton could possibly land. And thankfully, right now in the top four, there's not a lot of teams that regionally align with Pittsburgh. Indianapolis, not so much. There's a lot of cluster there. Like if you remember in 2017, they sent Dayton there with Kentucky. That was shitty. Tickets were fucking outrageous in the first round. So those are all the things that matter because you're going to have to buy tickets with three other fan bases. So getting Indiana State that's not exactly going to bring 30,000 people to the weekend is just as important as anything. So that's what I'm thinking about, Drew. That's what's going on in my head right now. I'm trying to wheel and deal and close business for my company. But, in the off times, I'm thinking about this kind of stuff. I just rattled it off. I didn't have anything in front of me. I just literally did all that from memory. I'm telling you right now.
And that's why you're just so damn good at this job, sir. That's really why you're the best. That's why we keep you around. You heard him. Start clearing the calendar. Start getting your PTO in and get ready to travel because the Dayton Flyers are heading to the NCAA tournament once again. And I got to say, my closing remark won't be anything like that. My closing remark, God, life off the bubble all season has been tremendous. Just not having to worry about, you know, even those years when we did kind of make the tournament, we still lived on the bubble to a degree. You know, we were pretty safe of it most years, but just life on the bubble, man, it's no fun. It's no fun at all. So being able to avoid all that all season has been tremendous. Obviously, we will have a wrap-up show and, you know, preview for the NCAA tournament. We'll probably try and do that early next week. Maybe like a Monday or a Tuesday release, schedule willing. Try and get something out before the tournament gets going. You know, kind of preview everything. Maybe discuss, you know, the tournament at large. Give some picks that are probably going to be wrong.
Damn, Skippy. No, we'll be back around next week. I'll be in DC this weekend. Work conference coming up next week, so I'm being fortuitous. And you might see your boy at the ACC title game on Saturday night. So I'm trying to make it a big weekend. Going to get to watch the Flyers hopefully Saturday afternoon once they get the win on Thursday. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. If I go to ACC title in person on Saturday night and then turn on the Flyers on Sunday, that's what I'm looking to do. So
you're going to be watching North Carolina hoist a trophy on Saturday night. All right, that's going to do it for us here in this edition of Talking Out Loud, the Atlantic 10 tournament on deck, ready to go. Let's see if Dayton can get that freaking monkey off their back once and for all. God, I hope so. That would be just grand. Sully, we have two rules on this show. I'm pretty sure you know what those two rules are.
They are wear red and be loud.
That is correct. We will see you all next week to find out where Dayton will be playing in the NCAA tournament. But until then, stay loud. Go Flyers.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.